You are listening to the official podcast of Journey of Life Church in Orlando, Florida. Visit us on the internet at journeyoflife.org.
So here's my opening question. Here's my opening question. A guy rose from the dead almost 2,000 years ago. Big deal. Who cares? Does it pay my mortgage? How many of you have a mortgage? Anybody have a mortgage? Okay, you don't have to raise your hand. Some of you do. Does it keep my kids from getting sick because somebody rose from the dead 2,000 years ago? No. Does it remove mental illness from my loved ones and the things they struggle with? No. So I think what I want to explore this morning is, why does it even matter that somebody rose from the dead 2,000 years ago and we've been celebrating it every year since then? What's the point? Why does it matter? I give you the answer in one word. The word is this: reality. Now, if reality doesn't matter to you, then the rest of my sermon is probably not going to matter to you either. So just sit tight and wait for brunch. But if reality matters to you, then the idea, the assertion, I would say the fact, that someone actually rose from the dead 2,000 years ago, when they promised to, when they said they were going to, I would say then that makes a big difference. And I'll tell you why. The reason it makes a difference for us is because in our day and age, what we've learned about the universe is that our intuition about reality really isn't very good. It's really not very good. Our intuition about what's real serves us well in the space in which we live, in things that are about the size that we are, and move at about the speed that we move. You know, we're on the earth and we drive cars and things like that. But when we get into things that are not in our scale, our intuition about what is reality breaks down pretty badly. The universe is not only expanding, but it's actually accelerating. It's blowing apart faster and faster, and we don't really have any idea why. There's energy out there that we can't see, that we can't perceive. So we call it dark energy because we haven't figured out how to measure it yet. So there's a lot of energy out there that we can't observe. Black holes. We don't know what goes on the other side of the event horizon in black holes, for those of you who like those kind of things and think about those kind of things. When things get really tiny, our intuition also breaks down. The things that we think are normal are not what happens when things get really small. Subatomic particles behave really weird. They actually pop in and out of existence. They can go from here to here without going through this space in the middle. They just disappear and reappear. That's weird. Do you do that? I wish I could do that. This morning when I had to run home, I really wished I could have done that. But that's not the way our intuition is. That's not the way our reality is. It also turns out that our own brains kind of fool us, even about our own decision making. There's some research that shows that in many circumstances, what happens inside our brain, if you really break it down, is that most of us like to think we're pretty logical people. We like, you know, consider things and we make decisions. But many times what happens is we're confronted with a decision, and the first thing that happens is we make the decision, and then very quickly our brain constructs a logical sequence to support the decision we already made. Yes. So even with our own thinking, our intuition about what's going on breaks down. And defining reality, understanding what's really real, is important to us because it gives us real power. Understanding reality gives us real power. Planes fly because we understand how molecules and gases behave at different speeds, right? Microwave ovens. You guys, those of you who come here regularly know I love microwave ovens because it's just so... Microwave ovens make food hot without using heat. And we do it all the time, so it seems normal now, But it's not intuitively obvious that you should be able to make food hot without using heat, is it? That doesn't really, if you just step back a minute, global positioning. How many of you have used a GPS or Google Maps or something? Anybody? Yeah? Most of us have from time to time. Maybe you don't know this about Google Maps and all the global positioning stuff. What Einstein said, and what we've come to discern through experimentation, is that time actually doesn't always flow at the same rate. Now, that is not, maybe you perceive things differently than me, but to me, it's not intuitively obvious that time might go slower or faster. Now, I know sometimes if you're sitting through a bad movie, time seems to go slower. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is time actually moves at different rates depending on how fast, how the relative speeds of different things. It also moves at different rates based on how much gravitational pull there is present. And so this is what I'm telling you, is that it's called time dilation, how the rate stretches and contracts. And they actually have to use that when they're calculating the positions of your car. They use the fact that time is stretchy when they're programming the GPS system. So GPS works because we have figured out that reality really isn't intuitively obvious that time is stretchy, but it is. And we figured out, and now we have the power to pull out our cell phones and know right where we are and know right where to get to. Knowledge, you know this saying, knowledge is power. Understanding reality gives us the opportunity to do things and live in ways that we wouldn't otherwise be able to live. Whether it's nuclear energy or nuclear bombs, as we grow in our understanding of how things work, we have power over our world, for better or for worse. Knowledge changes our lives, even on a personal level. Let's take this knowledge to kind of a different level now. You don't have to raise your hand, because I already know the answer, but what I want you to think about is how many of you learned some things along the way in your life, and now you live your life a little differently than you did last year, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, for some of you, 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Knowledge gives us power. It informs the way we live. So knowledge is important. Reality is important. And here's the thing. Our life, the very idea that humans exist, that the universe exists, it's a giant mystery. Nobody knows. Nobody can prove why the universe exists. Nobody knows. You say, like, well, there was the Big Bang. Well, what was before the Big Bang? Well, maybe it's the multiverse and the membranes collided. I don't know. And people say, well, you know, what was before that? What made that happen? What made that happen? And then some people will say, the Christians will say, God made the universe, right? And then, you know, the atheist is going to say, what's the atheist going to say when you say God made the universe? Yeah, see, you know all the answers already. You see, we're stuck. Humans are just stuck. We have to decide what we think is real. We have to look for evidence. We have to think about our life, the universe, and everything, and come to conclusions. Because who made the universe? God. Who made God? And, you know. So, let's get back to Easter, shall we? The historical consensus is this. And this is people who don't have any faith or anything like this. People who formerly had faith. The guy named Bart Ehrman is a good example. But this is the historical consensus. That there was a guy named Jesus who lived and who taught and was crucified. And then something happened that changed the lives of a bunch of cowardly people into very bold and courageous people who walked around proclaiming that they had seen Jesus alive. These people who said they had seen Jesus alive after he died did this not for a few days or for a few weeks, But for 25 years, 30 years, 40 years, they went around saying, nope, I saw Jesus alive. I saw him alive. They did this not while they were just huddled together, being reinforced by each other's beliefs and under the sway and influence of a charismatic leader. They did this while they were scattered all over the known Middle Eastern and Western world. All alone, all by themselves, for 25, 35, 40 years. That's when these people said, we saw Jesus alive. And they did it not to gain worldly power. In fact, part of their message is to give up the idea of gaining worldly power, right? That's what Jesus said, too. He said, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. They did this under harm and threat. And most of them were executed 25, 35, 40 years after they claimed to have seen Jesus alive. In all different parts of the world, they were tortured and executed, and they still wouldn't say, no, we didn't see Jesus alive after all. They, witnesses, refuse to say they didn't see Jesus alive. So that's the historical part. That's the historical consensus. And now the question is left to you today to answer this question. Because if you remember what I went through, all I said was something happened and all these people changed. The question you need to answer, and I suggest you answer it right now because it's a question about the nature of reality in which you live, is what happened? What happened after Jesus was, between the time Jesus died and these cowardly people suddenly became bold and for the next 25, 35, 40 years were saying they saw Jesus alive and then they were willing to be tortured and killed rather than admit that they didn't see him alive or say that they didn't see him alive. What happened there? Because if you think GPS and microwave ovens are important, life after death, that's, if you'll forgive the comparison, more important than a microwave. I think so. The resurrection of Jesus is one more point at which our intuition about life breaks down. Because I know it's in your brain because it's in my brain too. People don't rise from the dead. Anyone in here ever seen someone rise from the dead? Anybody? Anybody? No, see? Because we don't see that, and well, we don't. Our intuition is based on what we experience. And so when we assert that someone rose from the dead, our intuition about life, it doesn't fit the way we think about life. But remember, subatomic particles don't act the way we think things should act. Black holes, time, space, nothing acts like we think it should act except the stuff that's right on our own scale of life and in front of our face. So this is what you have to decide and need to decide for yourself because it's about the very nature of your reality and the life you live. Jesus said he would be killed on the third day and rise again. And he did do that. That's what I said. And if he did that, then he knows more about life than you. He knows more about life than me. And so we should take his teachings and his word seriously. If someone comes out of the grave after saying, you know, I'm going to die, and then I'm going to come out of the grave, and they come out of the grave, you say, oh, tell me more. You clearly know something I don't. And that's what Easter pushes into our lives. It's important because it changes our view of reality. It forces us to look past our intuitions to what might really be true. People all over the world want to tell you how to live. They want to tell you how to treat people. how to respond in different situations, what you should do with your money, what you should do with your time. And there are a lot of people who have come to a lot of wisdom. And I think Christians do a disservice when we pretend that other people have no wisdom about life except Jesus. Because, for instance, Jesus isn't the only one to say that we should treat others as we should treat ourselves. That's the golden rule. The Greek philosophers said it. The Roman philosophers said it. People have said it all over the world. Jesus said it also. Jesus isn't the only one to encourage us not to live our lives attached to worldly things. But Jesus is the one who said, I'm going to be tortured and killed, and then I'm going to come back to life again on the third day. Which is why we're here today, to celebrate Easter. So what does this mean for you? What does it mean today? What does it tell you about reality? What does it push on your intuition to accept, even when it seems counterintuitive to the way your natural instincts run? What does it mean? It could mean a million things, but it starts with one simple truth, and that's what I'm going to have to stay with today, because otherwise we'll just be here forever learning from Jesus, and I'm going to get hungry. It means this. It means that if you want to learn how life really works beyond your intuitions and your own impulses, then you want to learn from Jesus. You want to learn how to live your life from Jesus. The churchy word for this is disciple, because we have to have a different word for everything. But what it means is be a student. Be a student of Jesus. Other things and institutions can help. Churches can help. Hopefully pastors can help from time to time. Teachers, friends. But what I want for you today, this Easter, is to trust Jesus enough to become his student. To learn from Jesus how to live. To learn from Jesus how to treat other people, even when it goes against your natural impulses. To learn from Jesus what you should do with the material stuff of your life that you manage to earn and gather in your life. To learn from Jesus about the best way to spend your time and build your relationships. To learn from Jesus what the best way is to respond when people hurt you. To let Jesus be your teacher. Because Jesus tells us to do things that aren't always easy. He tells us to do things that aren't always fun. He tells us to do things that don't always align with our intuition and our natural internal responses about how to live our lives. He tells us reality is different than it seems. And he's the one who came out of the grave. So he gets to say, I think, that reality is different than it seems. Here's how Chuck Colson, anyone know who Chuck Colson is? He was on, he worked with Richard Nixon. He was one of the guys who went to jail after the Watergate thing, for those of us who remember the Watergate thing. And here's when he was thinking about the resurrection and these people who held on, who refused to deny they had seen Jesus after he died for 25, 35, 40 years, scattered all over the known Middle Eastern and Western world. When he thought about what that meant in terms of their witness, because their witness definitely, absolutely pushes against our notion of reality. It is not intuitively obvious to any of us that someone should be able to come out of the grave. In fact, it seems very strange and unusual and hard to believe. But here's what he said. He said, I know the resurrection is a fact. Watergate proved it to me. How? Because 2,000 years ago, 12 men testified that they had seen Jesus raised from the dead. And they proclaimed that for 40 years, never once denying it, Every one of them was beaten, tortured, stoned, or put in prison, and most of them were executed. They would not have endured that if it weren't true. In the Watergate scandal, 12 of the most powerful men in the world couldn't keep a lie going for 3 weeks. And you're telling me these 12 random fishermen, apostles, could keep that lie going for 40 years? That's impossible. So Jesus tells us how life really is, about how life is meant to be and how to start living that way now. And it begins with forgiveness. Not the demand that you forgive others. It doesn't begin with a demand. It begins with a gift. That's where Jesus begins. This guy who came out of the grave, he begins with a gift. Not the demand that you forgive others, but the proclamation that God has forgiven you. That whatever, Jesus comes out of the grave and he says, whatever you think that God is stacking up against you, whatever cosmic justice you think weighs down on you because of who you, the things you've said or the things you've done or whatever, that's all forgiven. The words Jesus used are things like hurled into the depths of the sea, separated as far as the east is from the west. It starts with the simple proclamation. That's the gospel means good news, not new set of rules. Did you know that? The word gospel actually means good news, and the good news is this: Jesus, that God is not holding anything against you. That's what Jesus said. So that's where it begins, with that hearing the proclamation that God forgives you, and then trusting Jesus enough that even when your intuition about universal justice and yourself tells you differently, you say, you know what? I feel differently, but I'm going to trust what Jesus says, that God is not holding my stuff against me. And it continues by trusting Jesus enough to believe him when he says that because of him, we should think of ourselves as God's children. And that we should think of God like a father. Like a daddy, really. The relationship that is the best model for our relationship with God, according to Jesus, is a child and a child's father. And that doesn't work for some people, because some of us had pretty bad fathers. And those of us who are fathers hope that's not us. But we know none of us are perfect. But you know what a father should be. And Jesus says that's the model for your relationship to God, who runs everything and created everything. That's good news. That's the good news of Easter. And then, because of the good news of Easter, you become a student of Jesus. You say, Jesus, well, how should I live then? And you learn, and you learn, and you keep learning about life, because you never stop learning about how to live. You learn how to treat people. You learn how to treat parents. You learn how to treat your children. You learn how to treat your enemies. You learn how to treat people in authority over you. You learn how to treat people over whom you have authority. You learn how to treat outsiders, people who look and think differently than you. You learn what to do with your stuff in order to live well according to real life, life that is realer than our intuitions. You learn what to do if you see the powerless suffering at the hands of the powerful. You learn what to do if you see somebody in need, and on and on and on. And Jesus teaches you how to live. And it all grows out of that love and forgiveness that he told us comes from God through him. And that he kind of guarantees by coming out of the tomb, because if he can keep that promise, then all his other words must be true too. It's all about how we live. That's faith. And I can't tell you everything right now, because that's the work of the rest of your life, but I can sum it up in two words. Love everyone. If you want to take Easter all the way to its conclusion, it's this: love everyone. If you want to honor Jesus, love everyone. If you want to worship Jesus, love people. If you want to worship and honor Jesus, love people. If you want to be a student of Jesus, of life as Jesus teaches us to live, love everyone. Even people who seem unlovable. Even people who pretty much... Wow. Some people you hear How many have ever seen something on the internet that causes them their stomach to turn and all they want to do is lash out? No? Yes. The only people that hasn't happened to are people who don't get on the internet. But here's how Jesus said. So we're getting right here to the end there, but I want to make sure that I don't just encourage you to take your view of reality from Jesus, that I send you home with something practical that you can take home. Because here's how Jesus put it, this idea of loving everyone. And I'm going to paraphrase. He said, if you love the people who love you, big deal. Everybody does that. Love those who hate you and pray for those who persecute you. If you respect those who respect you, big deal. Everybody does that. Treat with respect those who don't seem to deserve respect at the moment. I was listening to a podcast. It was an interview with a guy who was a former neo-Nazi. Skinhead, white supremacist, that kind of thing, right? And you know what he said? He said that the recruiting that goes on with those kind of groups, and I would say with other kind of things that are really youth-oriented evils in our society, often have to do with people being pushed away for their oddnesses and differences and weirdness. And then what happens is they kind of adopt some further weirdness, like neo-Nazism, and you see them, and what do? You push them away further. And what does that do? That confirms their decision that nobody likes them, that they're going to be pushed away, and they might as well continue on their path of hatred and violence. He says, what you need to do when you see someone that makes you want to go like this, you need to walk toward them. You need to love on them. You need to accept them instead of pushing them away. And he is saying exactly what Jesus said. Let me continue. If you only give money to people who could pay you back, big deal. Everybody does that. Give to people in need without thought of repayment. If you are only kind to people who are being kind to you, big deal. Who cares? Everybody does that. Be kind to people who are not being kind to you. Respond with soft words to those who are speaking to you with anger. So today we celebrate Easter. Jesus rose from death to life. And because he did, we will too. And I'm banking on that. But that's not the end. We don't just like Easter and stop. That's the beginning. And now, because of who Jesus is and what Jesus did, we want to become a student of Jesus, of how to live our lives. And that's what I want for you. And I want it for two reasons. One, because that's what Jesus told me to do. He said, go and make disciples, students. So I encourage you to become a student of Jesus because Jesus told me to go around encouraging people to become his students. And two, it's because I have found the words of Jesus to be utterly trustworthy. It starts with, I will die and rise again. But that's not the only trustworthy word of Jesus. It's always trustworthy. I have not always found Jesus' instructions about life to be easy or fun. I have sometimes not followed what Jesus said to do because I've had times of weakness or fear or selfishness. But this is what I will tell you about my own life. I have never once followed what Jesus said to do in a situation and it turned and thought later on, well, that was a dumb thing to do. I have never once followed what Jesus said to do in a situation and thought back later and regretted it. I have never once followed what Jesus says to do and turned back later and said, dang, I guess Jesus doesn't know what he's talking about. My personal experience is that when I follow Jesus, it's the right thing to do, even if it's not easy. Even if it's not painless. So Jesus, the one who was resurrected, who we celebrate today, is utterly trustworthy, and the best thing that you can do today is decide to or recommit to being a student of Jesus on how to live life. Not necessarily a member of a church, although that can be good. Not necessarily under a specific pastor, although pastors hopefully can be helpful. But to follow and learn from Jesus about how to live your life. If you want to honor Jesus and celebrate the resurrection, the best way to do it is to say, okay, Jesus, I'm going to be your student. Let's pray. Father in heaven, our life, our intuitions are so wrong about so many things, about molecules and microwaves, black holes. And our intuitions are often wrong about the way to treat people, the way to respond to situations, and what to do with our money and time. Today, I want to thank you for bringing Jesus out of the tomb. I want to thank you that you raised Jesus from the dead just like he said you would. And I want to ask for myself and for anybody here who wants to ask it with me, that you help me be a student of Jesus, to trust Jesus enough to learn how to live my life from him, even when it goes against my intuition, even when it goes against my impulse, that Jesus knows more about life than me. I want to ask you to help me to be in the church work, a disciple. And I want to ask that in Jesus' name.
Hey there, Pastor John here. Thanks for listening to the Journey of Life podcast. If you are finding it helpful or uplifting or in some other way of value, do us a favor and your friends a favor and share it with them. You could also help us out by liking it and rating it on iTunes or whatever way you get this podcast delivered to whatever you listen to it on. Again, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the official podcast of Journey of Life Church in Orlando, Florida. Visit us on the internet at journeyoflife.org.